This morning's meditation will not be extensive because we're going to be, before our break even, we're going to get right into the introduction to the rules. Let's see, S6. Okay. And I think, you know, we don't know whether we'll be able to finish these rules or not. I suspect not. And that's quite all right, really. It's better to go a little deeper than to rush through. So basically, these meditations will be simply the opportunity for us to kind of hear the rules and let them make an impression on us. And let's see here. So it's perhaps not quite such a cognitive meditation as it is an impressive, for the purpose of impression. Okay. And then we'll dive right into, there's so much we could, you know, so much preliminary material, but I just say, this you can handle on your own. And we did quite a bit about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge yesterday. There are many important distinctions, but I think you've studied those things to a degree. And we'll see later if we have gone far enough. Maybe we'll come back to that. Yes, she can if she wants to. Okay. Normally I would print these things out instead of keeping my computer on, but my printer broke, so. Okay. Right. So probably we'll reflect upon perhaps four of the mental rules this morning. Just reflect. And maybe, I think, get right into the discussion of them. So, spend a little time to settle in and have a steady breath, which helps to quiet the outer person. And we disengage ourselves from the lunar man, from the outer instrument, when we find ourselves as a point of consciousness within the soul dimension, we seek to understand ourselves as the soul itself. We seek to experience that our mind is held steady in the light of the soul. We will identify ourselves as if we are the white magician, focused in the soul illumined mind, and this is the attitude we will adopt until one day we actually become that type of soul-infused magician. from the perspective of the one who seeks to understand how to become the accomplished white magician, we will simply reflect upon the first several rules of white magic, allowing them to make an impression upon us, and realizing that we will attempt to study them and understand them more deeply. But first, simply an energetic impression. The Solar Angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep, communicates with his reflection. Himself scatters not his force, but in meditation deep communicates with his reflection. Rule 2, when the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower three are thrown upward, and the greater light illuminates the three. The lower light is thrown upward, and the greater light illuminates the three. And the work of the four proceedeth. When the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward. Greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. rule three. The energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. Energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth, until its light recedes, its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. These are the first three rules for magic upon the mental plane. Realize that they are rules which must be followed most carefully. So we will put many things aside which pertain to our personalities, and we will study these rules as if we are a soul-infused mind. All white magic proceeds from the mental plane as that plane becomes infused by the higher mental plane. And with the impressions from these three rules in our mind, we will sound the great invocation and proceed to our studies. Of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
Oh.
We'll preserve the meditative attitude. We won't have a debriefing right now because we need to get into the rules. We'll try to enter in the best way we can. Some of you have studied these before, but we know that the full nature of the rules will depend upon the establishment of the seventh ray, a return of a degree of peace and order in the world, a degree of clarity in the West, the atmosphere of the West, which does not yet exist. So we're in the very preliminary stages, but okay, we have to begin somewhere, and anything we can do in this particular life is simply a beginning. Maybe when DK emerges again with the third installment of the teaching, following 2025, as he promised, more will be given. Meanwhile, we proceed with the necessary purifications in order to make ourselves worthy of the reception of these rules. We have to be trusted. These rules will necessarily be of an esoteric nature, we are told. And the student will need to remember that the terminology is in the nature of a blind. That's encouraging. So obviously our intuition has to come into play here. Whichever carries revelation to those who have the clue, and our long years of study and deep meditation will give us the clue, but tend to perplex and to bewilder the student who is as yet unready for the truth, and I'm sure we will find ourselves in that situation often. I would also remind the student to bear in mind that all that I have imparted concerns white magic and is given from the standpoint of the solar angel and solar fire. Well, he's given a lot of contrast between the white and black lodge, and basically, in one way, it's very simple. It's selfish personal magic versus magic that seeks to manifest the planet. The black magician is using almost exclusively subterranean subdiaphragmatic centers, the solar plexus, spleen, sacral center, and synthesizing them at the base of the spine. And the white magician is using very much the heart and the directing apparatus from the head and so forth. The black magician is working against the plan, really working against the plan. Doesn't want to see the plan takes place, wants to know what the plan is so that he can be frustrated. And that's why they're frustrated. They want to seek to frustrate the plan. So therefore, they seek to know what it is, and the White Lodge seeks to keep it from them, and seeks that human beings such as ourselves do not grasp the plan too rapidly. Instead of just throwing the whole plan at us, it's a very measured revelation of what is the plan. perhaps because we might even reveal it to the wrong sources. So the whole treatise on cosmic fire has as its main focus point the solar fire. 500, 600, 700 pages out of the whole book are dealing with solar fire and with the higher mental plane and the kind of fire that the white magician seeks to use. So obviously this is the white magic of the soul, and if we are to a degree soul infused, and if we know what the soul plane is, and if we're not caught in our lunar vehicles, we have a chance of being able to approach the practice of this type of magic. If we're interested in all the kind of stuff that was coming out from Aleister Crowley and that whole group, not to say that there wasn't knowledge there, there's knowledge, but you know, it's very egoistic, and the heart is not involved in it, and at least not the higher aspects of the heart. There's an aspect of the heart where you can gather a group around yourself, but it's not the really second aspect of the heart. Those things will not be of interest to us. We will learn whatever they know, plus what the hierarchy knows. But we have to be worthy. So the solar angel and solar fire, this is the kind of magic we're going to do here, or become interested in. This doesn't mean that we couldn't learn, well learn, what the Southern Indian school has to teach about magic and mantras. I mean, there's a lot to learn there. But as DK has told us, the Trans-Himalayan school is precisely the school which will command the attention of all Western students, exclusively. So I do believe it has absorbed much of what the Southern Indian school has to teach, and for the modern Western Chela, and probably we will be that for some time, the Trans-Himalayan school is the way to go. Bearing these two points in mind, that the student will find much in these rules to produce eventual internal illumination. So I like that word eventual, because he tells us, learn all about this now, theoretically. You won't be able to practice everything, or very little in fact. But when the time comes for the revelation of the effective keys, you will be ready intellectually to handle it. So that's what we're trying to do. We will divide eventual internal illumination. Well, you know, the whole light in the head phenomenon, the whole idea of soul illumination within the consciousness of the personality, that's what we're talking about. You know, if you really want to talk about what the third initiation is, you could call it the illumination. That is a good name for the third initiation. And the idea there of Satori, put in the Japanese terms, the enlightenment in the Eastern terms, that's what the third initiation is. And we realize, unless we have the single eye, which is in process of development from the first to the third initiation and beyond, we cannot be white magicians. So the sacrifice petals, the single eye, the growing sense of synthesis, the approach to the third initiation, these are all required of white magic. I guess Stephen Pugh is attending our class. Okay. The amazing thing is you could beam him in. You know, we live in an interesting world, you know, and no problem. he'd be in a state of shock, so I couldn't do that right now. We will divide the rules of magic into three groups of aphorisms or occult phrases. Of these, the first will concern itself with the work of the magician on the mental plane, the first six rules, with his manipulation of solar energy and his ability to sweep the builders into cooperation with his purposes. It's not only lower energies that can be manipulated, apparently. It's also the energies of the solar angel which can be manipulated. Anything that you direct and anything that contributes to the rearrangement and repatterning of your environment, inner or outer, is a manipulation. You know, there are three types of monads: the director, the teacher, and the manipulator. We need to put back the right kind of meaning into that word, manipulation, and understand it from the white magical perspective. Okay. So the magician works on the mental plane, but is conscious on the physical plane as he is doing so. We are multiply conscious as we proceed with magic. Hopefully we develop continuity of consciousness. We can tell what's going on all of the lower planes simultaneously.
When he says the manipulation is solar energy, does it trivialize it to say that he means we're talking about love energy, or is that too narrow?
Well, prana is involved here.
Okay.
So the pranas have to vitalize or devitalize certain things.
Right.
And from another point of view, we're talking about loving mind and those things that come from the solar angel and where they can be directed. So love energy, yes.
Oh, I would say
love, yeah. Yes, I would say so. Yes. Yes. Maybe we could, I hate to do it, but I would like a little more light. Is that possible?
It will get stronger.
The light will get stronger. That's good. The light will get stronger as we proceed. Yes.
Look, it works. Manifestation.
And it will get much more.
It will become intense. Okay, very good. The second group of rules will carry the work down onto the plane of desire, and notice how he uses the word here, and of vitalization. There is a kind of vitalization through motive and aspiration and desire, which he's speaking of here. Normally when we speak of vitalization, we speak of what plane?
Theory.
The etheric, exactly. But he does look at this as the dual forces of the plane whereon the vital power must be sought or seen. It becomes the astral plane. So a vibrant, colorful, living thought form requires the vitalization. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Remind me, when we get to the end of this, I'm going to send you on your computers the sections from White Magic, which I have pulled out, and which you can, you know, follow along or make notes in if you wish. But we don't need it right now. We're still in cosmic fire. So vitalization, you know, as I say, it's one thing to have a good thought, but if nobody wants to do it, it doesn't happen. You know, so that kind of vitality by adding a desire to your thought form propels it towards manifestation. Otherwise it just hangs out there on the mental plane and nobody cares. Okay. So carries the work down onto the plane of desire and the vitalization, and will convey information as to the balancing of the pairs of opposites and their equilibrizing, so that eventual manifestation becomes possible. Now, the pairs of opposites in this case can be spirit and matter. And we also talked about the major pairs of opposites, soul and personality, or basically the light and the dark, or let us say consciousness. This is one of the major ones, consciousness and form. And in order to be a magician, somehow the balance between consciousness and form has to be understood. If we were simply interested in consciousness the way some of the advanced mystics are, we wouldn't care what happened on the earth. And that has been characteristic of the last 2,000 years when the sixth ray has been very prominent. There's been such an otherworldly orientation that, as D.K. says, a chaos has resulted on the earth through lack of the seventh ray. There have been seven sub-rays that have come in at various times and have created order within the six-ray context. But generally, the six-ray type, as D.K. says, kicks the earth as if it was a ball. Mm-hmm. Kicks it away, you know. Who cares? Because this isn't the real world, and we do have that current disrespect for the divinity of matter in some of the six-ray religions at this moment. They're so otherworldly oriented, and at the same time, they have also now, or could have, the power to destroy that which they disrespect. So this is a very... one has to proceed with the utmost caution at this time. And I'm sure the hierarchy is holding its breath. I mean, you know, in the sense of the interlude.
So to speak.
The third group of rules, of which there are four, will deal with the physical plane. including the etheric, and the transmission of force through the centers, through the brain, and the physical plane itself. Ultimately, we want to become effective on the physical plane. That's where we meet the ancient fires, as they are called. The ancient fires are coming from the previous solar system, maybe to a degree, eight of them embedded by the moon chain. They are very resistant to the imposition of the new patterns. So, we have to, but they will be becoming more receptive. The ethers are being reconditioned, they're being revitalized, they're being refined. So it's possible for them to receive the impression even more so, and matter itself is going to become more etherealized as we go. So we begin here with the six rules for the mental plane. Kind of funny that it would go 6-5-4. There must be a reason for that. Why they should be 15. It's a number that always suggests to me the Kumaras in some manner. Yeah. Well, you know, the physical plane, the number there is 4, and it makes sense because you have the base of the spine center is the fourth center from the concrete center, solar plexus, spleen, sacrocenter, base of the spine. There are 4, particularly concerned with the depths of materiality. The solar plexus center is the fifth center coming from above, but I don't see how the mental plane could be involved with the Ajna center, the sixth center counting from below. Generally, these numbers are not random. You know, if there are 6 rules and 5 and 4, it's for a reason. But the substructure has to be understood, and I'm not completely understanding it yet. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep communicates with his reflection. I think the solar angel has degrees of interest in its personal reflection. At first, not much, because there's not much it can do. It does various things to sustain its personality. If the solar angel withdrew the sounding of its word, the personality would disappear. The lower man would disappear. But the personality, but there is a divisibility of consciousness. And the solar angel can be, in terms of consciousness, in a number of places at the same time. And generally, until the human being is really working in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, there's not much the solar angel can do or will do. The solar angel will begin to pay attention when the fifth petal is being worked in. And by the time the fifth petal is completely unfolded and the seventh petal is receiving some work, even the touch of the rod, the first initiation has been taken, and the solar angel is definitely involved. Well, the seventh petal is where is the petal that is touched by the rod of the initiator for the opening of the, for the first initiation to take place, and by that time the fifth petal is completely unfolded, and the sixth petal is largely unfolded, and the extreme effort of the would-be initiate, plus the stimulation of the rod, is making for the rapid unfoldment of the seventh. Yes.
Yesterday we were discussing reflection. The monad is reflection and the shadow.
Yes, the monad's reflection and the shadow. Here, he, as I say, it's not consistent in his terms, but in meditation deep, the reflection of the soul is the personality, and the personality is the shadow of the monad. Okay, that he somewhere he describes that.
Okay. And here we have the solar angel's reflection,
which is in this case its instrument. So it's a reflection rather than a shadow. Although in the very next thing he uses the word shadow. So, you know, maybe one day the code will be revealed to us. The solar angel has various degrees of contemplative interest in its instrument. by the time you are initiate of the first degree, and you cannot really, can't be a white magician until you, the birth of the Christ in the heart has taken place. There wouldn't be any white magic, wouldn't be enough heart. So the degree of interest is very great at this time. And the true white magician is the solar angel who is saying, this is in the plan, this is what I want you to enact, I send you these thoughts, I send you these streams of energy, you, the meditating man, on the physical plane, concentrating in the mind. But the true beginning of white magic begins with the solar angel's intention. Now, whether the solar angel collects himself entirely, and whether all aspects of his consciousness are focused exactly and completely on the lower man, I couldn't say. But let's just say a deeper degree of concentration is now available, necessary. Somewhere DK talks about the downward gazing soul, and the master can look out at the members of his ashram or those who are associated with him in some manner and notice a downward gazing soul. This is definitely a downward gazing soul at this point. The stage may begin even earlier than this, but at this point it really has to be focused. So it's such a being, the solar angel. It has it's a member of the council chamber of the sun. It's beyond 7th degree, 8th degree, 9th degree, you know, as we look at these degrees. Maybe all of those Kumaras in some way are really solar angels, the ones that are released onto the higher planes. So the deep communication with his reflection begins in his own way. The solar angel can stimulate chakras, can stimulate permanent atoms. He's an expert in stimulating permanent atoms, can send streams of thought and streams of higher energy into the consciousness of the meditating human being. And DK will tell us that we will recognize these as our higher aspirations, our inspirations, all of the things that will uplift us. Well, DK begins by saying, the significance of this rule is easily to be seen. The white magician is ever one who, through conscious alignment with his ego, with his angel, so basically here there's a kind of an equivalence of ego and angel, but I've tried to explain what I mean by that, that a part of the angel or an aspect of the angel's consciousness underlies and has created the egoic body. The true ego is not the angel because it remains after the angel departs. The true ego is the spiritual triad and even more the identity of the monad. There's only one ego in all of cosmos, and it is the ego of the universal logos. I think one day we'll all discover that we are that. It's the universal egg. Egg, ego, ego, and the Greek meaning of I am is ya, ego.
So,
did you say that?
Yeah. Lego my ego.
Lego my ego. Yeah, there's and the good egg in all sorts of places where eggs are sold. Okay, so the white magician must be in alignment with the angel or that part of the angel that underlies the ego and has provided its vehicle, and is receptive to the plans and purposes of that ego, and therefore capable of receiving higher impression. Well, we discussed it yesterday. We've got a lot of thoughts floating around. We've got a lot of good thoughts that have been in the books of many other people, and they are all like fragments on the mental plane. We may, you know, we can repeat them, but do we really understand them? And when we start to think, we can cobble together many of those thoughts, but do they really come from our own higher impression? Do they really come from impression by the solar angel underlying the ego? And I would say that not so many really do, and that we have to be in a certain state of receptive, poised, silence, calmness to receive true impression from the ego right in our physical brain. And then we would have to discriminate what's just a fragmentary good thought engineered by someone else who knew what it was all about, and what is our own true impression from these higher levels. And I think, as it was shown yesterday by people repeating the thoughts that came to them when they were aligning with their solar angel, that there's generally a quality of love accompanying it. There's a quality of heart accompanying such thoughts, a quality of real relatedness and unity. You know, the ego is on the second ray no matter what its ray is. It's a unitive factor. It seeks a form of unity. How it gets there, of course, may depend on the ray of the ego itself. But when ego thoughts are coming in, the higher ego, there's that whole sense that we're all in this together. You know, there's the sense of harmlessness and right relations and the right patterning. So just watch your own thoughts and see how many of them are really tinged by the energy of love rather than desire.
I'm back to that solar energy being a combination, perhaps, of love, but also of vitalization. And maybe one of the ways we can distinguish between thoughts cobbled together, useful thoughts, good ideas, and impression, even if it comes through an old thought, is the sense of vitality.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happens to me. I feel inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I feel strengthened. I feel like doing something.
Yeah, feel motivated, animated.
And power. Mm-hmm. I think that power is a sense that something else is coming here. It's just an old thought.
And I think you said a good thing. You said it can be an old thought, but what if it is empowered by impression? An old thought empowered by impression becomes fresh and new. Now it's yours. It's not just something you have read, but it's something that is embodied, animated by the soul. So, you know, we don't want to have a lot of dead thoughts, because, you know, it's very unhappy, very tedious to just be repeating dead thoughts. It's the kind of thing that's been done from the pulpit of many churches for many years, and it's turned everybody off, because you could see that the people repeating them weren't in them. They weren't embodying those thoughts. And I remember there was a point in the Arcane School when we were studying that said, okay, you've studied a lot, now let's make what you studied real. And, you know, it was kind of a turning point. It might have been like getting into the Weavers of In the Light or something like that. Let's make it real. So, but that we can only do with our own experience. So ultimately, the Antikarana is built by each one of us by ourselves. No one's going to hand you your Antikarana. If you're going to vitalize your whole life via your internal power, you know. So we seek to become in alignment with the plans and purposes of the ego, which knows the plan. The higher ego, the solar angel, knows the plan very well, because that they've come right out of the heart of the sun, and the solar logos has a plan of which the planetary logos is simply a part. And ultimately, it's a Syrian plan in the long run.
Yeah.
It's a plan for the cosmic logos of our local area, local, a number of stars. You know, this, what did you say, the 49 planetary logoi of the seven systems, as we read yesterday. The plan, of course, is vast, and we can only get a tiny bit of it at a time, and we really have to begin with what do we have to do? You know, what's our specific job, and are we really doing it? I mean, then, if we're doing that, then the picture will always grow. Remember how it goes. Alignment, crisis, light, revelation, integration, actuary. So, actuary process. So, after the light has revealed everything that's wrong with you, the plan reveals what's supposed to be done. So, revelation is the fourth step. It's impersonal. And the solar angel knows this and is trying to make you, the monad within the personality, as responsive to the plan as possible. Help you overcome your amnesia, you know, amnesia of the plan.
Could you go through that sequence again?
Yes, it's a alignment, crisis, light, revelation, integration. When we were studying esoteric psychology together, we kind of added other little parts after that, you know, because in a way, initiation follows integration. Well, we're studying this in the Maurya Federation too. You know, it's all part of the process. The many different areas of your life that have to be studied simultaneously. It's like you have to have personal studies, soul studies, and spirit studies simultaneously. That's the synthesis of it all. Okay, we must remember that white magic works from above downward. You know, I mean, there is much to be said for what we call inference and for induction, which assembles many pieces of evidence, and then intuits where they may have come from. But somehow we have to know the major principles in order to do white magic. The occultist always works with principles and then works them out. Hey, Roberto, we're working from the top down. Okay. And Roberto and Fasha, yes. Okay, very good. Now the class is semi-complete for the day. So white magic works from above downward and is the result of solar vibration and not of the heating impulses emanating from one or other of the lunar peaks. Light and heat. And so when you think about heat, what planet comes to your mind? Mars. And when you think about light and you look for the brightest planet in our local area, we find Venus. So, in your horoscope, the Venus-Mars relationship is so much more than men-women. You know what I mean? It really is a profound soul-personality relationship. So, studying Venus and Mars, whether they're trine or square, and from what signs and what houses, telling you a lot about how that solar angel can overcome the personality and make it its own instrument. You know, if anybody's going to domesticate Mars, it's going to be Venus. And we're all in the school of domestication at the moment, becoming house trained to a significant extent. Gotcha. Okay. Yes, okay. Well, this is a well trained dog. Okay. And they can say about us, a well-trained human, yes, can be allowed in on the rug for our meetings, you know, under the table, you know, occasional crumb of wisdom falls off the table of the gods. You know.
And can maybe take 15 minutes without falling asleep.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Oh, it's that human howling again, you know, what are we going to do? So, white magic overcomes the heating impulse and gradually frictional heat dies down and we become capable of achieving what is known of the Christ, as I said, that calmness forever unperturbed. This is a phrase associated with the Christ. It's a very Venusian phrase, and if you think about the effect of Venus at the second initiation and also maybe of Neptune and Jupiter, it really does tranquilize the astral body. Rendering it a reflector of a Buddhic energy, and every one of those planets carries Buddhi to us, Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. Mars and Pluto, also active at the second initiation, do not carry calmness. They stir everything up so you can see, you know, what has to be placated, purified and placated. Let's just say we can be filled with aspiration, but if our emotions are in turmoil, we're not demonstrating the necessary control by means of which you will achieve mental illumination and spiritual intelligence, the two requirements of the second initiation. Mental illumination, spiritual intelligence. Okay, so the solar vibration, and of course it comes from the heart of the sun. If you think about where this is coming from, this is the higher mental plane of the cosmic planes. The cosmic mental plane, the heart of the sun, is found as the causal body and the solar soul found on the higher cosmic mental plane, of which our solar angels are a radiation. They are a extension of those great solar angels that come from God knows where, you know. They come from off the... If the analogy holds, they are on the super-duper cosmic astral plane, yeah. Just the way our solar angels probably have their monad, I would suspect, on the our own cosmic astral plane.
Yeah, this is such a really dependent idea.
Yeah.
That these beings, such a high order, would have any remote interest in a human being. And so what that says is how important and stupendously the potential within a human being is.
Yes, that yes. What is man that thou art mindful of him? You know, man is a little lower than the angels, as it has been said. It's a biblical idea. But don't forget, you get to make it up. Next, when you take the fourth path, you get as a blissful dancing point of fanatical devotion. You know, maybe 80% or so, the bulk, he calls it the bulk, go off to Sirius, and you get to come back and do the same for the animal man of the next cycle. So you'll have to be very patient, we understand, we have to be very patient. And fortunately we're able to have distracted attention, you know, we can watch television while we're even taking care of that animal man.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when solar angels came in 21 million years ago, so does it mean that they are related to this round in our old Earth chain, that part of humanity, or are they functioning now with the humanity in all of the rounds in this chain?
They, according to Blavatsky, well, you know, they didn't really have work to do in the previous chain, and all rounds we're talking about now relate to our fourth chain. But we're told in the secret doctrine that the laws, or sometimes considered solar angels, looked in the second round, just to see how things were going.
So in this chain?
In this chain, yes. And they've been active in relation to this chain. But as to exactly when they were breathed forth from the heart of the solar logos into our planetary system, it's not exactly given. Because they, you know, they may have already been resident on Venus or within the Venus chain of our team, or on the Venus globe of that chain, before they came to this Earth globe and Earth chain. So they may have been on our chain for quite a while already.
So then, I still continue this, because if we think, it's very amazing thought that if the solar angels would be related to only that little part of humanity, when we think about the humanity as a whole in the whole Earth scheme.
And beyond. They're,
and the beyond.
They're found on other schemes, too. And whenever they become
the
active...
The scheme of the other planets.
Yes, other planetary schemes. And whenever they become active, the heart of the planet is ready, of the logos of that planet is ready to take a new step, a new initiatory step.
Right. So, but anyway, it is very amazing thought. It is that tiny, tiny part of the humanity. Isn't it?
Well, okay, but here's the thing. On the moon chain, when the moon chain was active, the heart of the planetary logos was not yet at that stage of awakening that it awakened in the fourth chain. Nevertheless, the incoming moon chain humanity with a couple of their own self-generated petals open received their own solar angels.
Yeah.
In, you know, coming out of Pralaya, they received association with the solar angel, even though it came in later than the Lemurian individualization. The solar angels didn't have to individualize them. They had only to link with them. And if you think about it, who is DK writing for? He's not writing for Earth chain humanity right now. All of this stuff about magic is written for advanced moon chain humanity, of which he is one, and he's speaking always about the solar angel in its association with the man. So that is almost a proof that even though they individualized themselves on the moon chain by a different method than using solar angels, they have received an associate solar angel at some point when they came in, mm-hmm. probably in the third sub-race of the Atlantean root race.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just mention one thought about solar angel again. Even though it's a little different perspective than what I think you're trying to present, my feeling is that solar angel is used in a generic sense sometimes, like many of GTA's words, reflection, shadow, and it's not always one hard and fast definition that we apply to it. And here, for instance, when he says mm-hmm. alignment with his ego,
with his angel
mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. one example where he uses it in kind of a loose sense, and not necessarily with his returning nirvana nirvana mm-hmm. into the solar
yeah.
system sense.
Yeah. No, agreed. And what I have tried to, you know, looking at the divisibility of consciousness that exists in higher beings, I've tried to explain how the man is an angel, in a way, on the higher mental plane. The ego, for all intents and purposes, is so identified with this solar angelic consciousness which permeates that part of his monadic consciousness which has descended to the higher mental plane. See, look, let's forget the returning nirvana for a minute. Part of a man has a straight line coming down from his monad. It's anchored itself on the higher mental plane. That is the egoic consciousness of the monad. But now the solar angel, or the returning nirvana, infuses itself with, or in the presence of, that type of monadic consciousness, and now it becomes an amalgam. It becomes attenuated monadic consciousness infused by solar angelic consciousness. And so the man on the higher mental plane is referred to as an angel. The angel can even appear as in various forms. We're told how the angel appears. Now, what is the true returning nirvana? Where is this focused? What does it look like? What are its other activities? He sometimes hints at these, but we're not given the full story. We're only given the story of the part of the solar angel that is within the ego. And what our problem is, we don't know much about the blending of consciousnesses. See, in other words, we don't know what did it mean that Krishnamurti was giving his lecture as Krishnamurti, and then the Christ's consciousness, an aspect of it, okay, is in him and has blended with his consciousness. What happens when that happens? It's still his consciousness, but now it's totally infused by another presence and another quality. And what I'm trying to propose to deal with the kind of contradictions that we get in the book is that the solar angelic consciousness could do the same with that part of the monad's consciousness which descended directly to the higher mental plane. And I'll just show you the map, and you know what I mean. In other words, somewhere here, yeah. So, I forgot.
Did you lose your...
Oh, Kalina, did you? Oh, thank you.
You can have that.
I was wondering if... I was wondering if you collected the thing you gave me yesterday.
Yeah.
But there it is, you see, the monad goes directly. Now, that means... Look, monad has consciousness, monad has awareness, but there's a whole art of attenuation. In other words, I'm a full flame here, I'm half a flame here, I'm a third of a flame here, you know. In other words, it's called voluntary self-limiting. So there's this voluntary self-limiting that the monad undergoes while still retaining his full consciousness, so that by the time the monad, through divisibility of consciousness, enters the higher mental plane, he knows a lot less than he knew up there. That doesn't mean he doesn't know right now what he knew up there. In other words, he's conscious on all the dimensions simultaneously, and this is so foreign from our type of consciousness that we have trouble imagining what it is. But here's the monad, and there's no solar angel. But what the monad engineered this whole thing with the cooperation of the solar angel. The solar angel builds his vehicle and infuses that attenuated monadic consciousness on the higher mental plane, and for all practical purposes, this becomes a multiple thing. It becomes the etheric lotus, it becomes the soul, it becomes the causal body, it even becomes, quote-unquote, the angel. Mm-hmm. Not the full returning nirvani, obviously not, but the angel, for practical purposes. So then you have to look at the... You have to look carefully at the text to find out when it's what. And when it's generic and when it's specific and so forth. Okay, so first you, then you. Yes.
Okay, real quick. The solar angel gives us our spark of mind. Were the solar angels involved in the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms in any way? That's lunar lords.
The monad was involved in them, but not the solar angel.
No.
Our monad had already grasped to itself certain permanent atoms, rendering them permanent, certain atoms of substance rendering them permanent, and then building around them a type of group vehicle on the lower planes that's called the in-mineralization of the monad, in-vegetalization, in-zoonation, and finally the rendering human of the monad. But the monad's consciousness is already invested in the lower kingdoms, but not the solar angel.
Yes. So therefore, we, in previous chain schemes, maybe even way before that, we were in fact rocks, plants, mm-hmm. and animals. We had to
let's say that that part of the monad, which has lost its consciousness of what it really is, manifested through the lower kingdoms. If we say we were rocks, we forget that we are simultaneously conscious as monads, even while an aspect of our consciousness, a kind of a jiva, is invested in that slow mineral experience. We are everything. So it's just a question of when we're being the different aspects of all the things we can be. Yeah.
I was just going to say that the angels, whatever kind of angels, solar angels, or lunar lords, are aspects of that parallel evolution to humanity and create for humanity the vehicles through which that consciousness incarnates. So the solar angel provides that solar angelic substance that, with its inherent I-ness in it, creates the material, the substance from which the vehicle of incarnation of the soul on that level is created. And so they have a more of a vehicular connotation than a pure consciousness, though when you get to that plane, the consciousness and the vehicle are so closely interwoven that it's hard to separate the two. And eventually we know that those two streams, the Devic and the human, totally merge. They approximate on the Buddhic and totally merge on the monadic.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a tough question. Obviously, everything is the monad, and there are solar angelic monads, and there are human monads. The as I look at it, the consciousness of the monad is soul. Yeah, in other words, we, the being, the true volatile essence, the true spark, have consciousness and is soul. And so do solar angels or any kinds of devas. But the type of vehicle in which the consciousness of devas operates is much more fluid. It's much more, you know, like free energy or patterned energy, and the type of vehicle through which the consciousness of man operates is much more concrete. I think everything has consciousness, and everything has a vehicle. The learning of the consciousness of an angel is based upon close identification with the vehicle it uses. It is not the vehicle. Nothing is the vehicle. But it learns and experiences, as we discussed last time when we discussed the contrast between Lenin and Davis and so forth. You've got consciousness in this fluid vehicle, and it's very identified, and it doesn't learn by destruction, it learns by construction. The man, also a consciousness of a kind, just like an angel's consciousness, does not learn through identification with the vehicle. It learns through destruction of the vehicle with which it is mistakenly identified. So both are soul, both are identity, but in the kinds of vehicles they use, they are very different. And the degree to which consciousness is identified with and as a vehicle is different when you contrast those two parallel evolutions. Yes?
I think I recall in Ray's that he mentions that technically, as we move beyond the mental plane, that consciousness isn't really a term that applies. It's more a state of being.
Consciousness as we know it.
Yeah.
We've got to be really careful, because he says that so that he can introduce human consciousness to the life energy and explain to them that life is not dualistic consciousness as we know it. But he applies the term consciousness to the planetary logoi, to the solar logoi, to the one about whom naught may be said. So we can hardly think that the term consciousness loses its utility once we get into the cosmic ethers. It's just a different kind of consciousness. And as a matter of fact, consciousness is an absolute principle foundational to the whole cosmos and exists at the beginning of cosmos. So that's just a heuristic point. He's helping us get over our identification with the kind of consciousness we have and to move into this identificatory life understanding.
Would it then be kind of a departure from the Buddhist outlook? The consciousness?
Okay, so say
all
a little
the way, well, what you just got through saying about where consciousness, it being sort of the substructure of everything.
Yeah,
it's where nothingness sort of seems to be the basis of that whole school of thought.
Or in religion, yes.
Which doesn't give room for consciousness.
Suchness.
But
however, you know, I think if you follow closely what they say, there's a state of universal awareness of the suchness. You know, there's no way that the Buddha wasn't the supremely awakened one, you know, the totally wide awake, and didn't have this kind of consciousness beyond duality.
Yeah, but I mean, teaching though that eventually he transcended that, and that state at which he existed then is...
It's based on human limitation. It's based on the limitation of the human mind. DK tells us that nirvana is but the beginning of the endless way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he tells us we don't have the words to really describe all that, but there's no way that the three foundational principles of cosmos are going to disappear. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are not going to disappear. And they represent life, consciousness, activity. Or, you know, Satchitananda are not going to disappear.
So I've never quite been able to really get what they're talking about.
Yeah, I just think they are trying to help us grow beyond the sense of this and that. So the suchness is everywhere, and there's a universal substance and a universal consciousness which is everywhere perceived, no matter, despite the variations of form. They want us to keep our consciousness from becoming identified with the variations of form.
Exactly.
They want us always to detach. You know?
No thingness is what that is.
No thingness, yeah.
Well, I got into this big discussion about this thing in another class, what's his name, in San Antonio. The guy that teaches all this stuff. Anyway,
Yeah.
To get, I mean, you just sort of get in a
yeah.
circular
yeah, go in a
conversation
circle.
With conferences.
there's nowhere you can go with it. these are just words and concepts.
That's right.
You know. Now, if we've been having that discussion in Texas, we'd call it no fineness. Yes, Mark. Yes.
We had a similar discussion related to the idea of no self.
Yeah.
That there is no self in Buddhist philosophy, and there is no soul.
Yeah.
Yet somehow we have Gautama Buddha, we have Maitreya Buddha, these enlightened beings who somehow have their own identity that we can distinguish one from another.
Yeah.
And what do we call that?
That's
like they say in Texas.
Explain that. I think we just have some terminological disconnects here. You know, all of the connections haven't quite been made.
Did you talk with any Buddhists and ask that person what did they answer?
Well, they cling somewhat to the idea, and you know, it can be true. There is no self. In a certain sense, there is no self.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll hold firm to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to also reconcile that with the fact that there does seem to be identities within these enlightened beings that
distinctness.
Still, there's something. Mm-hmm. There's something. It may not be a self.
Mm-hmm.
May not be a soul, but there's something still there. It's hard to deny.
Well, here we're being presented, you know, by a Tibetan Buddhist.
Yeah.
This teaching. You know, and I think that basically it has an awful lot to do with the esoteric Buddhism.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we have to get into this philosophically. You know what I mean? What is nothingness? And is it absolute fullness?
Right.
Is there nothingness, absolute fullness? You know?
No, it's slimness.
Slimness, absolute slimness, yes. Well, that's, you know, I tried to address a number of these issues in the infinitization book, okay?
Given that.
But obviously, and he said, you know, DK said that Buddhism would proceed to get increasingly dogmatic. He did say so.
That is one question what I am thinking, but when they talk about Nirvana, do they talk about the Atlas plane, because it's called Nirvanic plane, and then Monadic plane is called Paranirvanic. And
Mahaparanirvanic.
Or something. So if one thinks about Nirvana, that it would be Atmic plane, then one would somehow understand, because it's still about the, how mind could turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think it means literally, or at least in one sense, to blow out.
Right.
And the Nirvani has blown out all vehicles below the Atmic, or extinguish. Yes.
Yeah.
So in a sense, there is nothing left of that.
That's very interesting, because if the solar angels are returning Nirvanis, then on what plane are they really focused, regardless of where they are putting in an appearance? This is interesting. The whole, like a Maya Varupic presence of where their real focus is. Look at this thing here. He's being prophetic here, and he's talking about the unintelligent public and the hierarchical technique. And I don't know what he means by the second group, because I haven't read it back. But anyway, the second group will implement the new religion. By the time they come into control, the old theological activities will have been completely broken. Judaism will be fast disappearing, Buddhism will be spreading and becoming increasingly dogmatic, Christianity will be in a state of chaotic divisions and upheavals. When the situation is acute enough, the Master Jesus will take certain initial steps towards resuming control of his church, the Buddha will send two trained disciples to reform Buddhism. Other steps will also be taken in this department of religions and of education over which the Christ will rule, etc., etc.
I think this is where he's talking about masonry, the church, and the esoteric workers, the second century, the church.
Yes, and certain ashrams will be coming in. Groups of spiritually minded financiers who are conscious members of an ashram will take hold of the world economic situation and bring about great and needed changes. May it be soon, right? It's not Henry Paulson, no?
No.
In all? No, I guess not. Anyway, you know, it'd be good to read this book, Externalization of Hierarchy. Another class.
5 year assignment.
Read our way towards 2025.
I'm sure you have it.
Yes, he did. He did take certain things. Yes. Glenda, did you have something there you were saying?
No, I was just saying.
Steepling.
Praying.
Yes.
There's a couple of contemporary Buddhist type people, Americans, who are moving away from dogma. I was listening to Robert Thurman, you know, he's kind of a major factor here in Buddhism. And when he talks, he'll say, this is not a religion, nor is it a theology. He says, we're into practice. So don't worry about it, people. Just practice. This is his
life. Really karma yoga, you know?
Yeah, really.
Really.
And then if you hear Kenpo Roshi, you know, I mean, he has taken Zen, and he just talks about big mind and heart. And he said, it's totally psychological. He said, I had 25 years of training, deep Zen training, and I realized in the Western mind, you don't need to be beaten up, slapped in the face, back of the head, just kind of stuff. he said, there's a way. And if you ever watch his tapes and see what he does, this is a very developed person, obviously. He's in his 60s now, but he will just summon different voices in you, people who are developed, and you kind of watch what comes up. You know, I could say more about it, but he's taken a whole psychological approach to his end. So you have some people coming in now who are just thinking these old, let's call them religions. There are some essences. You saw the Qigong, which I discussed, yeah. A young guy studying all different kinds of Qigong says, here's what's essential. I put it all together now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it to you.
Right. He said, furthermore, what I'm giving to you would take normally 20 years of practice.
Exactly.
And you're ready for this now. Humanity has evolved. Mm. But you don't need to go for 20 years.
Mm. He teaches groups of 600 people.
Yeah.
In large auditoriums. They show up.
He wants to show up, do an auditorium of 10,000 to 15,000 people
shift
the
right shift, exactly. It is a dream of many reformers.
Yeah.
To have the right audience, you know, the right size.
And
the Dalai Lama says the same thing in his ethics for a long time. He just boils it down to affection.
Yeah.
Not
happiness, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good when simplicity can emerge from all of the mountains of tomes, you know.
Yes.
Just, okay.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah,
go ahead. Okay.
Well, anyway, wherever we were, I think in the book, we were. There was a question of heating impulses and light impulses, right? And then we got in with the solar angel, and look, you know, it is the mystery of the solar angel, right? So if it's a returning nirvani, when was nirvana taken in the previous solar system? And on what plane? That itself, you know, it just struck me. That could give a very strong hint as to where. But on the other, you know what's interesting though? What if nirvana in the previous solar system was related to the Buddhic plane? And in this solar system, it's related to the Atmic plane.
That makes sense.
Well, they call it the nirvanic plane. Could that be an argument for the main focus of the angels to be upon the Buddhic plane? It could be an argument for that. We don't know because it's, you know, there's this this hierarchy of lives veiling the Christ. They're the fifth of the liberative hierarchy, but they're not quite liberated. And, you know, they have a very strong connection with the solar angels. Their number is 5. They are ruled by Cancer. And the solar angels number is 10, and they're ruled by Capricorn. You can see the opposition, and you can see the 5 and the 10. So, you know, I just wondered how high are solar angels. Don't forget, everything moves higher all the time. So the previous solar system liberation would have occurred at a relatively lower stage than our own. So probably they're minimally Buddhic beings. You know, it's sort of the lowest that they would have to manifest. In other words, the fall out of the cosmic ethers is their sacrifice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, that's... But at the same time, they are really linked to this veiling the Christ hierarchy up there. And they're a dual hierarchy as well. See, in other words, what I say, or I'm trying to say, is that the real position of the solar angels is not given on the chart.
Yeah.
Just their sacrificial position is given. Yeah. They're five, they're underneath man, and yet they're much above man. So it's just, and what's really underneath there is a hierarchy of lives that are the lower part, or the lower reflection of the solar angels producing the human personality. They are the crocodiles.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, it's dual, and you know, what's really shown there is the potential for the downward pointing five-pointed star rather than the upward pointing. That's where egoism and all the big battle lies, with that number five in the inverted star.
Can you show us that?
I'll just go there.
Yeah, and related to that, I'm always wondering why are they called the crocodiles? Such a primitive. Yeah.
Well, you know, yes, it's true, and. Blavatsky does rather exalt the crocodiles as being the first to salute the sun on the Nile. You know, so, but there's no way to dignify that crocodile so it becomes filled with loving kindness. So, you know, I've sometimes looked at this thing, you know, in trying to solve the mystery of the solar angels and seeing that there's an aspect of this number five which is not much described. And just a few hints are given, and Makara, the mystery, kind of wraps it all up. And when you look at the solar angels, per se, you find them on the Buddhic plane, along with man. Yeah. So, you know, to me, the investment, it's almost as if this group underlies this group and is redeeming the personalities, turning the crocodile into a dragon, if you will.
Yeah.
Into a higher form of reptile, you know.
They are already that.
But the solar angels are already
serving
gods.
They are like spies. They are advanced and they take the hood of the lower being. That's why it works.
Okay.
Well, like
they
also
provide potential, you know, to go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
right. But
right.
Because they, the what I'm understanding about the mystery is exactly that the higher being, having the higher energy and vibration within, can go and take a form of the lower that is able to be there.
Yeah.
And that's why it's drawing the lower vibration higher.
That'd be quite a sacrifice. A little bit of a parallel sacrifice to the solar angels taking the ill-favored tabernacles of clay of huge early animal man and kind of investing themselves entirely in the man, basically becoming that man.
Part of that old redemptive.
Yes, yeah. You put on ugly clothes, you know, and...
And I have been thinking, I think that all of us, we have this kind of experience that sometimes when you go to some very low place, really low, that there are some wonderful people or animals, let's say that, whatever, but you just, because you know them, that they are, that it is just a stage of evolution, and that's why you love, even though everything you would say that I don't want to be here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember once when we went to Sri Lanka, and we had there the godchild, or how do you call it, that you support. And all these wonderful people, they are living in the jungle, and then they bring you something. I don't know what it was. It looked awful. It was just about smelled awful.
Yeah.
And with the smiling, you know, they want to give us, and we ate that, and I was all the time like I will vomit anything, and I'm thinking chocolate and ice cream. But I couldn't do that for them, because they were, their eyes were like that they are giving the best of them. Yeah.
And that's how the Buddha died. But no, that is how the Buddha died. The farmer offered him the pork. He saw through it immediately. He forbid his disciples to eat it. And he accepted the farmer's hospitality and was poisoned.
Yeah.
It was poison. Not deliberately poisoned, but it was
oiled or something.
Painted pork.
He knew
what it was. He knew what it was.
So it was thanks to God.
That's why and then Master Maurya said that death saved the Buddha from deification.
What means that?
Meaning the worst thing you can do as far as the hierarchy is concerned is to make a high soul into a god. Then everybody can just worship you and not imitate you.
This is really true. Because he would have been easily able to transform that.
Sure. He could have just done it. But his time had come. And then, you know, and of course, and it's a bit, oh, and that's the same story with Milarepa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Milarepa was given poison food. And he saw immediately through the man who was coming to poison him. This was deliberate.
Right.
And then the man begins to cry crocodile tears, if I may bring it back here, and says, oh, if only, you know, I'm so sorry that you feel so bad at the moment. If only I could take some of your suffering from you. And Milarepa said, well, try this. And the man went into total agony because he had transferred. He had these higher transferring powers. He transferred the whole experience to the man and then withdrew it. Do you still want to do that?
Wow.
You know, and then he just stayed with it for a while. You know what I mean?
You get to that level. That is very, very, very.
Wait, well, you start by studying and meditating. In the Maurya Federation, you know.
There are a lot of people around very quickly. Wonderful experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the studying thing to do with the Jewish
Yeah. Well, I think that may have occurred before that time. There's something about the cloven hoof, you know, and the there's something about the devil and duality and all of that. You can't eat of the cloven hoof. You know?
And there was, I remember one documentary what was telling about the flesh of pork or pigs, is that they. When they are wild, the living, there is some kind of parasite, which is always related to
right.
That.
Right, and it's cooked.
Yeah, that's right.
They're a very dirty animal anyway.
Yeah.
Like wallow in.
But smart. They're smart.
Yeah. But when do you know, Mike?
Where are we going? What blood type likes pigs?
No, but I will tell one story. My friend was veterinarian.
Vegetarian. Yeah.
No, veterinarian.
Veterinarian.
The doctor. They have their pets as their home pig. And no, that pig is very, very clean.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the
yeah.
No, it is. It was a lovely lady.
They're in the hands, and they were allowed to roam freely. They would not be in. It's just like cows in these awful places. They're in their own self, too. You know, who's the farmer?
Right.
The Farmer Brown. Now, can we go back to Cosmic Fire for just a little while?
These are heating impulses from one or other of the
good segue. The downflow of the impressing energy from the solar petri, the downflow of the impressing energy from the solar petri is the result of his internal recollectiveness. He really knows how to meditate, right? His indrawing of his forces prior to sending them out concentratedly to his shadow, man. Now he's called a shadow instead of a reflection. And by the way, the planetary logos does this too. They all collect themselves in order to meditate before they undertake the creative act. And once they undertake the creative act to build their instrument, they sustain their instrument, right? Yeah. They have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. You create it, you sustain it, you destroy it. And it's steady meditation upon the purpose and the plan. Okay, so even right now, presumably, with our own downward gazing souls, something in us is meditating on the plan even now. And we just have to attune to it, to know what it is. Nobody, in a way, has to tell us what the plan is, although we have been told. We need to attune with that process which is working within us. The plan is the illumination of the mind, the revelation of love, the evocation of the will. That's the plan. In a nutshell, that's the plan. Okay. It may be of use to the student if he here remembers that the ego, as well as the logos, is in deep meditation during the whole cycle of physical incarnation. Now, obviously, you remember how Alice Bailey said there may be a time when you can transcend your ordinary rhythmic meditation. I wouldn't advise it yet. But she says that in that case, you're in meditation all the time. You feel like that's the case for you. Yes, Alice Bailey said, there may be a time when you can transcend your sort of rhythmic meditation. It gives way to being in meditation all the time. Mm-hmm. Right? Mindfulness, I guess it would be called. Right? Right? Mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So that's an extremely skillful state, I suppose. It would mean all the time. Yeah. Imagine.
So you said that the plan is the illumination of the mind, the revelation of the heart.
Revelation of love and the evocation of the will. Mm-hmm. The evocation of the will. Plan in a nutshell. Okay. And when we're looking for the other nutshell, we're told that the great invocation encapsulates the plan. Right? Okay. Okay. So maybe this is an incentive to us to be in deeper, constant meditation. This solar meditation is cyclic in nature. In other words, it's ongoing, but there are pulsations within it. You know, it's ongoing, but there are pulsations within it. Okay. The Petri involves sending out to his reflection rhythmic streams of energy, which streams are recognized by the man concerned as his higher impulses, streams, and aspirations. So, you know, sometimes one of these catches us and we feel uplifted, and they are coming out from our sustainer. I at the point build, let's see, direct and choose and dominate. I at the point attract. I at the point sustain. I at the point love all. You know, this is the soul in the integration technique number two, sustaining, choosing, dominating, loving, directing. Okay. Therefore, it will be apparent why workers in white magic are ever advanced spiritual men. For the reflection, now he's back to reflection, is seldom responsive to the ego or the solar angel until many cycles of incarnation have transpired. So, you know, we look at average man, and the type of religion that he will want is not the kind where he understands there to be an inner God to which he is responsible through disciplined approach. You know, it's a little too hard, but maybe increasingly it will be possible. Okay. Advanced spiritual men, how advanced? I would say the birth of the Christ must have taken place. In other words, the heart has to be ignited. The monad has to have made its contact with the soul on its own plane, as happens at the first degree. A degree of purity in the physical etheric body must be achieved, otherwise it can't work. Yeah, okay. Well, really, if you think about who Master D.K. is writing for, if esoteric psychology is written for initiates of the first degree, which he said, then this book is too. This, you know, it may contain hints for people who are far beyond, but in general, who is the mass audience? People who have taken the first degree and have the second degree in sight. You know, and as far as having the second degree in sight, I sent to Philip the other day a reference. You know how there's these references that tell you that there's a long time between the first degree and the second degree? And I found a reference that says there might be one incarnation. Yeah, I found a reference, yeah. As a matter of fact, I probably copied it, but I can't really remember what I said about it. other groups to be used, mystics fifth principle. It should be up here near the top. Or actually, what I could do is just go to Philip, the letter I wrote to Philip. Mm-hmm. That would be, maybe I did, I was so foolish as to not, but I'll show it to you because I think it's very, very important somehow to realize that things are so terribly fluid. Now close your eyes because I don't always write nice things to Philip. I just pressed the wrong button. And now we're going to have to wait for that spinning thing to stop. You think? No. AOL has a mind of its own. I have a feeling, I talked to Clifford Bauto the other day and he said, if you're still with that antiquated program and paying for it, of course there is now AOL free, you know.
Gmail.
I'm with. Come on, for heaven's sake, say something intelligent. Okay. Well, I'll come back to that. You know what I mean? Now the whole computer is broken down. Just because I want to show you that maybe you only have to spend one life between your first and second initiation. This would be very encouraging, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The life that would be.
Yeah. I said to him, Philip, try this quote. I said, two contrasting statements. This was it. Philip, look at this. At the first initiation, he becomes aware definitely of the part, relatively inconspicuous, that he has to play in his personal life during the period ensuing the moment of revelation and the taking of the second initiation. This may involve one life, or it may involve one more life or several. This has compressed the period between the first and second initiation. Now, here's the other reference. Many lives may intervene between the first initiation and the second. A long period of many incarnations may, of course he's using that word may, which now begins to look interesting, may elapse between the control of the astral before the control of the astral body is perfected and the initiate is ready for the next step. The analogy is kept in an interesting way in the New Testament in the life of the initiate Jesus. Many years elapsed between the birth and the baptism, but the remaining three steps were taken in 3 years. Once the second initiation is taken, the progress will be rapid, the third and fourth following probably in the same life or the succeeding life. So here we have an opportunity. This may involve one more life, first initiation, second initiation, one life, or several, or many. It begins to look like, according to our intensity and the degree of our practice, our
and
will.
Timing. It all boils down to that, doesn't it?
It seems that we have a lot, the time equation is very much in our hands. This is quite an incentive for people. Yeah. If you study the life of Milarepa, I read Evans Wendt's story of his life. It's shocking. I was depressed for a month. You know, I just couldn't believe how anyone could achieve what he achieved in the time he achieved it. It looked like he went from the second degree to the fifth degree in one life. Yeah. That's what it looked like.
We met him in Mongolia.
What is it?
We met him in Mongolia.
Oh, he did.
The Dalai Lama said was the reincarnation of Milarepa.
Oh,
that's so nice.
But you know, it really didn't look that advanced. Yeah. It was too ignorant to perceive it, but he's like the biggest lama in Mongolia.
Mm-hmm. Is he, how old?
35.
No, 40. Yeah.
So that's Middle Reifers.
So it's like...
You know, you do have to really...
And he didn't do anything to you.
He
didn't do anything to you.
He told us about all our past incarnations and our future incarnations.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Hey, but here's what I want to know. Did he turn green and fly?
Yes,
yes, yes. Well, thank you.
Without
wish. That's what we started to believe in.
Yeah, that was it. He ate a lot of metal soup, you know. He turned green, they say, and he could break out of any prison, and he flew.
This guy was raised in the U.S., spent some time in the U.S.
He was born in New Jersey, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was Mongolian. His parents immigrated there.
Well, we'll see.
Jersey is a special place. Yeah.
I have a feeling that Miller Raper was certainly a master by the time he finished.
Yeah. Just as a point of reference, he knew we were there because we were interested in Shambhala and all of that, so he gave a talk about Shambhala. And he started out with his own life history, how when he was very young, people, all he wanted to do was go to a monastery. You know, and he just nagged his parents and nagged his parents, and finally they sent him to India. They talked with the local Buddhists, and they said, okay, he needs to be trained, and they sent him to India. He studied for, I think, 13 years. He went in when he was a young boy. And there, as he's described it, some of the older monks saw something in him that led them to believe that maybe he was an incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And then these monks went to the Dalai Lama and they said, you know, we may have an incarnation on our hands here. Do you know who this might be? So the Dalai Lama said, well, give me a list of all the great lamas that have died in the last 15 years. So they did, and he looked at the list, and he said, yeah, this one, who was the greatest lama of Mongolia, and who in a previous incarnation was...
Had been Milarepa.
Yeah.
So that's the way he deduced it. Yeah.
So, on the subject of Shambhala, he said he had this teacher, an older monk, and he said this older monk sometimes would ask him, does Shambhala exist? And Milarepa would say, yes, Shambhala exists. And then on another day, the same old guy would say, does Shambhala exist? And the Lama would say, no, Shambhala doesn't exist. So then the Lama would smile, the old guy would smile, and he'd say, Shambhala.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of from the top of the Buddhist hierarchy, the view of Shambhala that were presented.
Okay.
And it may have been just because they knew we couldn't accept or integrate anymore. That's as far as it went. It goes.
They had a high assessment of you.
Yes.
Do they actually really talk about Shambhala? With the word Shambhala.
Yes.
It's
very, they use a lot of the word Shambhala in the culture. I mean, it's very present. I think you were kind of taken back by the fact that you was, you know, the presentation of Shambhala that we get in the teachings is much more profound.
Yeah.
He was, maybe, but as he said, maybe he was just making it simple.
They disguise things, you know. They think no Westerner can handle it. The Tibetan fooled him. He came over here and did a little work, and that we're qualified to go back. Well, okay, I think it's time to take a little break, and then we'll resume with the book. Okay?